curiosity. Today we begin a month-long exploration of this theme, not only from the pulpit, but also in small group ministry and the children's RE program. Last Sunday, we began our new adult religious exploration series called Building Your Own Theology, and about 28 people showed up, which was amazing, amazing. We look forward to the next session. So building your own theology will culminate with each of us writing our own credo. To believe, from the German belieben, means to hold dear. The Latin word credo literally means I set my heart, and has been translated into I believe. What have you set your heart upon? What do you believe? How do you know what you know? Is this your only story? Being part of a liberal religious tradition, we Unitarian Universalists identify with being seekers, being curious, exploring our inner world and the world around us in order to make meaning of this journey called life. We are guided by our values and principles, and we are aware that meaning-making is dynamic. It includes our own daily life experiences as we move forward on our quest to know ourselves better, to grow spiritually, and to strengthen our resolve to make this world a better place. So being part of a liberal tradition without orthodox creeds means sometimes we have a harder time than other religions guiding that faith development and developing and renewing those credos. And we also have the opportunity to continue exploring, continue questioning, challenging, creating a diverse, covenantal, beloved community where we not need believe in the same idea of the divine in order to love each other and engage in social justice action. Together, we are learning that regular spiritual check-ins, consisting of sharing our own stories, asking questions, is really key to healthy spiritual development and growth. No matter what our beliefs, I believe we are all spiritual beings. And it is a good thing to ask ourselves regularly, how am I doing spiritually? Am I living with gratitude or regret? How am I prepared to deal with illness and death? What helps me to get through the hard times? Do I keep to myself, or am I serving and inspiring others? How do I express my spirituality? What is that rock that I cling to during the storm? Would you say that your spirituality is vibrant, rooted in gratitude, a source of joy, making you feel that your life is a very worthy project? And when in doubt, can we live into that uncertainty, live into those questions? This constant search for meaning is the spiritual dimension in our lives, an invitation to understand the nature of faith and belief. Whether you identify as humanist or religious, how does life work? What is true? We puzzle about relationships and search for ways to understand our experiences. How do we learn to make meaning? Is faith a word that is charged for you, perhaps not in a very positive way? Or is it a positive word that dwells at the core of yourself? Is faith that rock that you cling to during the storm? So many words can express our spirituality: wholeness, transcendence, mystery, moral purpose, intuition, tenderness, capacity to love and be loved, the animating essence of life. And we can keep expanding our vocabulary to reconsider the meaning of spirituality and faith as we gain new perspectives on trust, on belonging, on connection, and what is possible. As we continue to write our credos, I think about storytelling. I grew up hearing the Genesis story of how Adam and Eve were punished and banished from paradise for eating the fruit of the tree of knowledge. I carried visions of those illustrations that showed Eve as the evil temptress, the guilty one, the one responsible for my suffering every month in a childbirth. Oh, yeah. And as a young girl fascinated with mysticism and spirituality, the message was a painful one. Being curious and being a woman was dangerous. This Genesis story was the justification for the marginalization of women, both inside the church and out there in the world, and also inside my own heart. But I never stopped asking questions and learning, questioning theological language, those sermons that I heard on Sundays, the premises, the methods, and the systems that produced those kinds of stories that made me feel like the outsider, like the evil one. I never stopped asking questions because I looked at my own life and the life of my mother and my grandmother and all the women around me, and all of our lives contradicted that story. My consciousness-raising experience is directly linked to liberation theology, community activism, and feminist theology in particular. Learning to interrupt narratives that made us invisible, objectified us, and made us into a symbol of evil. That was and is still my ongoing practice, to interrupt that. When confronted with the everyday suffering of women and the causes for that suffering, I could read between the lines, and I could begin to imagine there had to be another story. Later on in seminary, I learned the word hermeneutic, which means the branch of knowledge that deals with interpretation, especially of the Bible or literary texts. In my feminist theologies class, yes, spelled with an A, Professor Elizabeth Schussler-Fiorenza taught us to apply hermeneutics of suspicion when interpreting biblical texts. This meant asking lots of questions, deconstructing language in order to construct a new communal narrative that was one of liberation. Being suspicious means being curious. It means conspiring with others, changing that narrative, telling a new story closer to our own hearts and realities. We read Judith Plaskow's The Coming of Lilith and learned that before Eve, there was Lilith, known as a demon of the night who, according to rabbinic legend, was Adam's first wife. Lilith was created equal to Adam, but she was uppity. Yeah, she was strong-willed. Oh yeah, she was outspoken. And she couldn't stay married to Adam for a very long time, so she flew away. Judith gets together with a group of women to write a new creation story, one which portrays Lilith not as a demon, but as a heroine, and more importantly, as a friend and sister to Eve. In the process, the women in the group strengthen their own sisterhood. Ready? In the beginning. In the beginning, the Lord God formed Adam and Lilith from the dust of the ground and breathed into their nostrils the breath of life. Created from the same source, both having been formed from the ground, they were equal in all ways. Adam, being a man, didn't like the situation, and he looked for ways to change it. He said, "I'll have my fix now, Lilith," ordering her to wait on him. And he tried to leave to her the daily tasks of life in the garden. But Lilith wasn't one to take any nonsense. She picked herself up, uttered God's holy name, and flew away. "Well, now, Lord," complained Adam, "that uppity woman you sent me has gone and deserted me." The Lord, inclined to be sympathetic, sent his messengers after Lilith, telling her to shape up and return to Adam or face dire punishment. She, however, preferring anything to living with Adam, decided to stay where she was. And so God, after more careful consideration this time, caused a deep sleep to fall on Adam, and out of one of Adam's ribs, created for him a second companion, Eve. For a time, Adam and Eve had a good thing going. Adam was happy now, and Eve, though she occasionally sensed capacities within herself that remained undeveloped, was basically satisfied with the role of Adam's wife and helper. The only thing that really disturbed her was the excluding closeness of the relationship between Adam and God. Adam and God just seemed to have more in common, both being men, and Adam came to identify with God more and more. After a while, that made God a bit uncomfortable too, and he started going over in his mind whether he may not have made a mistake letting Adam talk him into banishing Lilith and creating Eve, seeing the power that gave Adam. Meanwhile, Lilith, all alone, attempted from time to time to rejoin the human community in the garden. After her first fruitless attempt to breach its walls, Adam worked hard to rebuild them stronger, even getting Eve to help him build the wall. He told her fearsome stories of the demon Lilith, who threatens women in childbirth and steals children from their cradles in the middle of the night. The second time Lilith came, she stormed the garden's main gate, and a great battle ensued between her and Adam, in which she was finally defeated. This time, however, before Lilith got away, Eve got a glimpse of her and saw she was a woman just like her. After this encounter, seeds of curiosity and doubt began to grow in Eve's mind. Was Lilith indeed just another woman? Adam had said she was a demon. Another woman. The very idea attracted Eve. She had never seen another creature like herself before. And how beautiful and strong Lilith looked. How bravely she had fought. Slowly, slowly, Eve began to think about the limits of her own life within the garden. One day, after many months of strange and disturbing thoughts, Eve, wandering around the edge of the garden, noticed a young apple tree she and Adam had planted, and saw that one of its branches stretched over the garden wall. Spontaneously, she tried to climb it, and struggling to the top, swung herself over the wall. She did not wander long on the other side, before she met the one she had come to find, for Lilith was waiting. At first sight of her, Eve remembered the tales of Adam and was frightened. But Lilith understood and greeted her kindly. "Who are you?" they asked each other. "What is your story?" And they sat and they spoke together of the past and then of the future. They talked for many hours, not once, but many times. They taught each other many things and told each other stories and laughed together and cried over and over till the bond of sisterhood grew between them. Meanwhile, back in the garden, Adam was puzzled by Eve's coming and going and disturbed by what he sensed to be her new attitude towards him. He talked to God about it, and God, having his own problems with Adam in a somewhat broader perspective, was able to help out a little. But he was confused too. Something had failed to go according to plan. As in the days of Abraham, he needed counsel from his children. "I am who I am," thought God, "but I must become who I will become." And God and Adam were expectant and afraid the day Eve and Lilith returned to the garden, bursting with possibilities, ready to rebuild it together. How will you change the story? Would you jump over the wall? Making meaning of those life experiences that are like shipwrecks that leave us doubting our own existence is the stuff of life, isn't it? Viktor Frankl, Holocaust survivor and author of Man's Search for Meaning, teaches us that not only creativeness and enjoyment are meaningful. If there is a meaning in life at all, then there must be a meaning in suffering. He suggests that there are three sources of meaning: the intrinsic worth of human experiences of love and beauty, serving a cause greater than oneself, whether by raising a loving family, creating a work of art, or committing oneself to some great social cause. And three, discovering meaning in human suffering, finding significance in the hurts of human life, physical and spiritual. As meaning makers, we constantly become more conscious of living in a dynamic reality, an ever-changing motion that brings with it transformation of the ways we understand ourselves and the world. Every day we are in constant motion. We are moved by the beauty in nature, by someone's kindness, by another's suffering, by the mystery of unconditional love. We move from fear to trust, from hopelessness to deep abiding faith, from powerlessness to courage, from loneliness and alienation to relationship and belonging. The universe, God, Goddess, the spirit of life, Gaia, touches us as we wrestle to find meaning amidst our personal shipwrecks. Spirit, the breath of life, weaves through the fabric of our lives, sifts through the wreckage, stretches our souls, making room for our new stories, for our new credos. Who am I under these stars? Who am I, one among the stars? Can I be at home in the universe? What do I know? How do I know what I know? We are always becoming, and the connections we make, the relationships we have, are the motions in faith, in belief, in meaning making. It is in relationship that we are invited to open up, to revisit our values, our beliefs, our assumptions, and perhaps ask, why did I ever think the way I did back then? In building our own theology, some people are returning to take the class after 10 years. They're sifting through their records and rereading their original credos and wondering, what's it going to look like now, 10 years after? What is the foundation of my faith, of my belief? What beliefs and practices have I rejected and let go of? Who has been influential in my developing my spirituality? What am I struggling with right now? So for a couple of minutes, I'm going to invite you to an abbreviated version of building your own theology, using the image of the tree of knowledge, the tree of life. Ideally, we'd hand out paper and colored pencils. Let's use our imagination to draw our own tree of life, tree of knowledge, beginning with the roots. What are your religious, spiritual, nature-based beliefs and practices? Who has been influential in shaping your faith, your values? What personal, religious, spiritual, mystical experience has filled your soul with awe and amazement? What great suffering has been both heartbreaking and a breakthrough in meaning-making in your life? What is the source of your strength and hope? What is the rock that you cling to during the storm? What are the main branches of your tree? How have you grown in your faith, beliefs, and values? What are the leaves and fruits made of? How has your heart expanded? What new practices are nourishing your spirit? What new consciousness have you experienced lately? What is blooming, just beginning to bud? Roots, branches, leaves, fruit. The tree also has the shadow self. It gives shade. Under the tree lie discarded leaves. They may be your discarded beliefs. What are they? What have you let go of? What have you rejected? What doesn't work for you any longer? Contemplate in your mind's eye your tree of life, your tree of knowledge. Know that this community contributes to strengthening those roots, to celebrating those fruits, to grieving what must be let go and is hard to give up. Beloveds, know that your questions are the stuff that makes this life interesting, fascinating, worth it, illuminating, inspiring. Know that each time you ask A new leaf is born in the tree of life to affirm your worth and dignity. May what is blooming in your heart and soul bring you joy. May what you have left behind be the compost for your credo, for your new creation story. Amen, and blessed be.